So the discussion this evening, which is on the table, is the idea of pleasure and, I guess, happiness. What's up with pleasure and what's up with happiness? And I'd like to begin with a little confession. I'm embarrassed to tell you, but it's a big moment in my life. I got a letter this morning, and I'd like to read it to you. Don't stop me. And it reads, "Dear Rabbi Lawrence," that's me, "congratulations, you have won $5 million. Yes, you, Rabbi Lawrence, 46 Brattle Road, New Hampshire, New York, 10977. Have finally won $5 million. Congratulations." I got it in the mail. "That dream house you always wanted in Florida. That dream vacation you wanted in the Bahamas. That fancy sports car with the rims and the blue light underneath it." What's up with that, by the way? That blue light thing. Is that like cool? It's like, hey, look at me. I got rims and a blue light. "Yes, all of those things are yours. Yes, you, Robert Lawrence Tadjo, 46 Brattle Road, New Hampshire, New York, 10977. Congratulations. Please return this letter with a check for $500 and your email and enjoy many happy years. Thank you." What? What? You aren't excited for me? Oh, it's jealousy, is it? Well, excuse me. Jealous of the rabbi. Pah! What? Why aren't you excited for me? You're not excited because you know it's nonsense. We get these letters in the mail every day. You can't go onto a website without a window opening free iPod. What do you say to yourself? It can't be. Why? Why for one moment didn't you believe that I won $5 million? Because people, generally speaking, don't hand out checks for $5 million to strangers. Actually, they don't even hand out $5 million checks to friends. How much more so to strangers? Because every pleasure that we have, every source of happiness, we instinctively know has to come with a cost. It can't be. There has to be a cost that I put into that thing in order to gain my pleasure. Tonight we're going to take an amazing journey, an incredible journey through this idea of pleasure and happiness. Because I believe very strongly that if in 500 years anthropologists were to dig into civilization here in America and were to dig deep around the city where most Americans are living, they would find artifacts of people that would demonstrate to them we're pleasure seekers. Because that's who we are. In essence, the food we eat, the music we listen to, the people we hang out to, the places we go to socialize, they're all there to promote pleasure. We are the pleasure-seeking generation. From the Big Mac to the Mountain Dew. I said Jew, not Jew. Yeah, I said Jew, not Jew. All these products, to the iPods, to the disposable world we've created, they are all screaming out very loud, and we'll see why exactly that is. That we seek pleasure. People go to jobs that they despise. And I apologize to all the lawyers out there. Melissa, don't hurt me. And they all seem to be saying, especially the lawyers, I hate my job. Not all of them, but a very high percentage. So why do you do it? They just pay me so much money. And they do, with the bonus at the end of the year, which is more than my salary. But the amount of pleasure I can get from this thing, I'm not saying these people are cheap or shallow. I mean, most of them are, I'm kidding. But these are people who are saying, I'm willing to give up, those who don't enjoy their job, I'm willing to give up that reality in order to acquire for myself the potential to create pleasure. We're going to unpeel this topic, an obsession of ours, of all of us, in order to understand what this pleasure thing is all about. Let me make a comparison for you. I just flew back from Israel, and people ask me, how's your flight back? Are you jet lagged? And I'm actually not jet lagged. The first time I go to Israel, many times a year, you know that, I've been doing it for many years, ever since the first Reloaded trip, which I organized with Shelley, maybe 4 years ago, and I get back and I'm a zombie for 3 days. My wife can't talk to me. The kids prod me and poke me. No reaction, just lying there like a beached whale. But this time, it was fantastic. What was the difference on this return flight that I had no jet lag? I flew business. That's basically it. I flew business. And the interesting thing about business is it's much better than peasant class. You see, because behind that curtain, and I now know what that curtain is for. I always wondered. I thought the curtain was for privacy. No. The curtain is actually there to hold back the smell from the lower class. I actually pulled back the curtain and say hello to people. I was like, peasants. What's up with that? What an incredible experience. My entire tuchus fit on the seat. Usually I'm like, one cheek at a time. Here, I could actually spread out. My legs were up. What an experience. I got 7 hours straight. Out cold. I was like, oh, I'm thirsty. Usually you call for a stewardess, you get a slap. Here, you get a tray, some water, piece of lemon inside. I'm like, could you squeeze that, please? A little bit more. Just for me. The blankets are stainless. Usually, there's a peculiar little stain in the middle of the blanket. I don't want to know. Here, clean, fluffy, in the packet. I'm warm. I can hear the groaning and the shouting and the tortured pains from the lower class behind me. And something occurred to me. Really, all of life is like a plane journey. What's the best way to travel on a plane? First class. What an experience. I mean, I actually saw an advertisement for Saudi Airlines, some Middle Eastern airline. They now have a first class suite where you get your own room. You can close the door and not see anybody. Imagine that. Your own fridge. I'll be like, fridge? Free? I'm open up. I'm glad I'll lean it down. What an experience. That's the way to fly. El Al, first class. They don't hit you with a fist. You use an open hand. I mean, it's so much better. Who wouldn't want that experience? That's one way to go when you're flying. What comes after first class? So they call it business, right? Now, really, it should be second class. But who wants to fly second class, right? No one wants to be a second-class person or second-class flyer. So they call it business or ambassador. Then you have third class, right, which we call coach. It's coach. Sounds much better. Like the bag. I fly coach. What comes after third class or coach? Coach, right? Turns into luggage. Cargo. You're there with the animals. Sitting there, freezing cold, like a stowaway. It's another way to fly. What comes after fourth class? So after fourth class comes fifth class. And fifth class is they give you a rope tied around the wing and tell you to hold on. Holding on for dear life. What a perfect analogy for all the pleasures. There is first class travel through life. There is second, third, fourth, and there is actually fifth class. Dare I say it? I truly believe most people go through life experiencing fifth class all the time. There was a book that reached the top 10 bestsellers in the New York Times. It sold 800,000 copies. It was called Final Exit. Now, this book, which sold 800,000 copies, was created as a way for people to know how to commit suicide in the safety of their own home. Now, I'm sure that 800,000 people didn't buy it and just kill themselves. But those many people definitely wanted it on their shelves, so that if the time came and life got too tough, they could take the book off the shelf and let go of that rope. What I want to show you is that just like there are five ways to travel, there are five levels of pleasure that make up this world. Now, these are not my ideas. Many modern rabbis speak about this, but it goes back. There is a book called the Sefer HaChinuch, which literally means the Book of Education. It's a classic book. It was written, we're not too sure who wrote it, but we know why he wrote it. He wrote it for his young son. His son was about to come to bar mitzvah and said, "Dad, why do I have to be Jewish? Why do I have to keep Passover? Why Yom Kippur? Why charity?" And his father said, "That's enough. I'm going to write you a book that is going to give you the reason for every single one of the 613 commandments, tell you how to do it, and why you're expected, and the benefit you're going to get out of it." And this book has become a Jewish classic. And now children not only read it, and it's usually given as bar mitzvah gifts, but adults read it as well. And there's very deep commentaries on this book. And you can buy it in English as well, the Book of Education. So somewhere in this book, he stops and says, if you want to understand what life is about, you must understand the concept of pleasure. Because Judaism is all about pleasure. That's what he says. And then he lists off a very short list. And I'm going to expand on this list to try to break open some of these incredible ideas for you. So let's start at the bottom. What would you say is the lowest level pleasure, and we'll call this pleasure number five, that a person experiences in this world? What's a low level pleasure? A pleasure. Material. Well, like shmata? No, working fabrics? Material possessions. What else? Come on. What's a good pleasure? Eating. Okay, anyone here like eating? Okay, for the lack of food we have tonight, yeah. Of course. You like it going down. It tastes good. What else?
House.
What?
House.
House? Roof over your heads. Okay, I guess that's not a pleasure. Well, I get it. It's a nice house. Nice sofa, I guess so. Just roof over the heads is a very basic one, but yeah, I guess so.
Drinking.
Thank you so much. I'm waiting for a JC person to say that. Finally, you admit to it. Hi, my name is Rabbi Lawrence. And I drink at the JC. Yes! Drinking is a nice pleasure. Anything else? Television. Michelle Betrock works in television. That is a working television is a pleasure, or watching it? Really? Wow. Fabulous. Working it for Michelle and watching it. What else gives us pleasure? Music. Anyone enjoy listening to music? Hello? Yeah? A piece of art? Sports, watching or playing? Both. Very true. People watch sports. I never really got it, by the way. I'm like, I go to the stadium, and I'm paying all that money, and there's like a really long line to the toilet, and I can be home, watch on TV, and I get my own private lavatory. I mean, what's up with that? Well, watching, being in the stadium is true. Being in the stadium, in the cold, freezing, with a big hand, for some reason, is a tremendous pleasure. We're going to see why in a moment. So watching, playing sports, yeah? What else? Humor, telling a joke. When you hear something, you get a pleasure out of the joke, especially when Rabbi Lawrence is making the joke. All these things give us pleasure, and they're great. Now, the funny thing is, says Sefer Chinuch, in Judaism, we like physical pleasures. Our holiest day is Shabbat. What do we do on Shabbat? We eat, and we drink, and we sing, and we dance, and we're intimate, and we have schmoozes with people, we get to discuss things. It's all about physical pleasure. We're not scared of it. We're not Christians. It's amazing. We're the only religion where the highest position in our religion is completely different to every other one. Every other religion, The higher you go, the more celibate you have to be. The priest, right? The guru, all these people always celibate. In Judaism, you're a big rabbi, here are my 14 children. Yeah. Oh, sorry, I mean 15. And not only for having children, right? Physical intimate relationships are seen as very, very holy. We take the physical and we uplift it. We raise it to a higher plane. So we like physical. The question is, when, how, why, and for reloaded people, with whom? That's how we see our physical pleasures. They're good. They have potential for greatness. But you've got to watch and limit and apply it the right way, at the right time, with the right person. But the thing itself is good. Let me ask you a question. I want you to think about this. All pleasures have something in common. Every pleasure. Let's think about physical pleasures for the moment. Let's look at that lowest level pleasure. What do all physical pleasures have in common? What makes them pleasurable is what I'm really asking you. Yeah.
Consuming.
Well, I don't consume art. I guess you engage it, you consume it into your mind. I hear what you're saying. Okay. But what makes it pleasurable? You can consume something that isn't. What makes standing in a snowy football stadium, right, with a bunch of schwitzed up drunk people shouting and screaming, what makes that experience pleasurable? What makes that pizza, that steaming, hot, crunchy, cheesy pizza pie, which in Israel even comes with a little table on it, a little small, but it's there. What makes that pizza delicious? What makes that piece of music that just uplifts me when I hear it? What makes it pleasurable? It's worth thinking about. Considering we're people who seek pleasure, we might as well try to find out what pleasure is, what makes it pleasurable. This is this incredible idea. If you hear this idea, it could change your life. All pleasures have one thing in common, and that is harmony. They harmonize perfectly. Think of a good meatball dish, right? It's in the pot, and as lovely, I apologize to all vegetarians out there, I'm only kidding. We have a lovely, yummy meatball dish. What makes it so scrumptious? Why do I love it so much? Isn't it all about the harmony of the ingredients in this case? Just the right amount of salt, to just the right amount of oregano, to just the right amount of meat, to the right amount of tomatoes. Too much salt, can't touch it. Too little salt, has no taste. It's got to be just right. You're harmonizing ingredients. How about art? Right, take some paint, throw it on a canvas. I've made this. All right, no problem. Put you up on the tape. Put you up on the MoMA, right? But what makes art beautiful is just the right amount of color with the right stroke and just the right amount of yellows and greens and blues. It's harmony. How about music? Right? When my kids play music, it's dun-dun, drive me crazy. But if you go to hear a professional band or a group, it's just the right amount of guitar to just the right amount of cymbal. To the right amount of piano, to vocals, it all harmonizes. All of life's enjoyment doesn't come from extremes. It comes from harmonizing the ingredients of life and organizing them in the most perfect, balanced, synthesized way. Are you following? Let's take that to the next level. One of the great thinkers of the last generation said the following. He said, what is the greatest pleasure a person has? Now, we're going to apply this concept to all the five levels. So bear this with you. Take this with you on the journey. So what makes any pleasure pleasurable is resolution of a doubt. You're under the chuppah, and you just feel a tremendous wave of happiness and excitement, and there's an energy. I've fortunately performed 25 weddings, and all of them except one actually. You're under the chuppah, and that almost finished the next day, but you're under the chuppah, true story, and you feel this energy, this thrill. What is that? Is it the cake? No. Is it her dress? Her makeup? It's already smudged a little bit. The guests? Don't know who they are. What is it? Says the Chazon Ish, a great Jewish commentator from the last generation who lived in Israel. He said, because we've now resolved the doubt. When you resolve a doubt, even if it resolves on the side of bad, it's still a great feeling. You hear people who are very, very sick, for example, and are waiting for a diagnosis, and they're tortured, trying to resolve where this is going to go, and then they wait, and eventually comes out, I'm sorry, but it could be terminal. There's a certain amount of relief that comes with that judgment, because right now, at least I know what it is. The doubt is resolved. And how much more so if the result comes out positive and that person's okay. So when you're under the chuppah, your doubt is resolved. Who I'm going to marry? I now know. When? I now know. How I'm going to pay for it? I now know. My in-laws? I know it all. It's the resolution of a doubt. Okay? Another thing. Before we move up our levels, I'm going to go far tonight. We're going to go deep. Deep. There's another few things you need to take with you on each level of pleasure. Now, watch very carefully. There are three things that pull all pleasures together, which are prerequisites in order to understand that pleasure in detail. They are, number one, to really understand a pleasure, you must become a connoisseur. You must become a connoisseur. For example, just a couple of days ago, I got back from Israel. On an Israel trip, we, those who came with us, know that we make a habit of going to a winery. Now, the first time I went to this winery, now they know me. But when I first got there, I was like, oh, just finished a crazy bike ride. Let's go, bring out a wine. Bring it out. Yeah, just come on, uncork it. She's like, let me tell you about the wine. I was like, no, don't tell me. I'll drink it. So you start with a 10-minute schmooze. Right, about grapes. I'm like, if I want to hear about grapes, I go to the grocer. I go to the deli. I want to hear about wine. No. First of all, and then finally she finishes the schmooze. She uncorks it, pulls it in. I'm like, she's like, no, wait. She's like, first of all, you got to look at it. I'm like, looks like wine to me. You got to smell it. Bouquet. I'm like, it's not a bunch of flowers. It's a glass of wine. She goes, you've got to look at the color. Does it leave legs down the side of the glass? Too much legs, good sign. Too little legs, lack of acid. What's going on with it? You want long legs, those lines that come down? Hold it up to the light. I'm like, can I drink it? He goes, yes, you can drink it now. I'm like, I said, what are you doing? You got to move it around the four areas of your mouth. I'm like, I finished it. And then you got to spit it out. Spit it out! I don't got to spit out wine. I got to drink wine. What's going on? She's teaching us a lesson. If you want to enjoy the pleasure of wine, which is a fifth level pleasure, even a fifth level pleasure must be appreciated. Near my home, there is a chocolate store that I'm in love with called Le Chocolat, which is French for the chocolate, in case you don't. Le Chocolat, the chocolate. And they have chocolates there, it's a true story. Chocolates there for like $1.52 for a little chocolate. So my wife said, come on, let's go, we've got to check this place out. We just got married. I walk in, I'm like, I'm like a kid in a chocolate store. Actually, I am a kid in a chocolate store. I'm like, right, 30 chocolates, $30. No problem. Put it on the bill. Pick up a chocolate. I said, this looks good. What's in it? Almond? Put it straight in. My wife went crazy. What are you doing? You just ate $1.50. I was like, pretty damn good. She's like, you got to bite it in half, got to savor the moment. By then, another seven had gone into my mouth. But she's right. $1.50 chocolate. It ain't just a Hershey's bar you just shove in there. You got to take time, savor it. Let the different colors and flavors and fruits and some of the nuts and... I don't know, I had it too quickly, didn't taste anything. But you're meant to let them savor on the tongue. And when the chocolate warms up on your tongue, a whole new experience. You know that, by the way? When chocolate warms up. You know what I'm talking about? You got those like bar mitzvahs or weddings, they got those chocolate fondue things. Come on. You want to put your head in there, don't you? I'm like, just pour it in. Pour it in. It goes, Rabbi, you just poured me the wedding. I know. Just pour it in there. I'm like, come on, let's put a finger in. Let's put it one finger. No one's going to know. It's brown chocolate. They're going to know. I'm like, doop, doop, doop. I'm like, here, take a strawberry, dip it in. Shove it in there. I'm like. Become a connoisseur. Take your time. Taste it. That's number one. So every pleasure needs a little bit of connoisseuring to appreciate it. Number two, you've got to focus on the pleasure. Focus on the pleasure. Let's say, for example, you go to a local park. And I'm standing, I see these kids playing basketball. Yeah? I'm like, okay, guys, pass me the ball. Pass the ball. I'm like, okay, carry on playing. Like, throw us the ball. I know. Carry on playing without the ball. And they're like, okay. So they walk around like this, and they're like, and then some other guy goes, and they're like, this is ridiculous. Rabbi, give us the ball back. What's the difference? What's the difference? Because you've got to focus and keep your eye on the ball, not the effort. Without a ball, you're losing the whole game. It's all effort. Okay, what am I doing? But when a ball is in play, I can focus on the pleasure. I can keep my eye on that goal. Number one, become a connoisseur. Number two, keep your eye on the ball. And number three, you must watch out for counterfeit pleasures. Every pleasure, which I'm going to show you, there's a reason why this is. Another discussion on free will. But there must be a counterfeit pleasure that comes with every pleasure. So physical pleasure, number five. What would you say is a counterfeit? As in, it looks real, tastes real, but it's not the real thing. What's a counterfeit pleasure of physical pleasure? What's the counterfeit? What's the imposter? Drugs. Drugs. Also physical pleasure. They take you high. Very high. But there's something called gravity. What goes up, it must come down. When I was in a rabbinical school, many people choose different areas of, like, if they wanted to, extracurricular stuff to do. Some people learned about kashrut. Some people went to pulpits, you know, rabbis of synagogues. It wasn't for me, as you probably realize. But for me, I got involved in drug rehabilitation. Not myself. But I learned a lot. And I used to go to these Jewish weekends, and I learned about drug taking. While I was there, there was a rabbi doctor, he was actually a psychiatrist, and he did the following experiment. He brought a bunch of teens together, and he said to them, guys, I got a great drug for you. They're like, what? I'm like, we had to learn how not. He goes, trust me. Great drug, $1 a hit. Gonna give you the most exquisite high. Goes in his pocket, takes out a handful of colored pills. They're like, trying to jump on this guy. He pulls back and says, oh, there's the catch. What's the catch? The catch is the high from these drugs won't kick in for 24 hours. For 24 hours, you're going to feel nothing at all, and then the high is going to kick in. No one took the drug. Because when I want a physical pleasure, real or counterfeit, I want it now. Drug addicts are like children. They have not learned to defer gratification. Let me bring it down to our world, maybe. I see the chocolate cake. I want it. I desire it. It looks good. I want it now. But I'm on Weight Watchers. And Weight Watchers says this cake has points. 50,000. And my limit is 18. One bite would make sure I couldn't eat for another week. What's up with that? People banking points. My wife did Weight Watchers recently. She's banking points. I eat nothing today, so I can eat everything on Saturday. And she banks points like all week. And then Saturday comes, like shoving it all. What's up with that? It's got to be now. Physical pleasures, by definition, need to be experienced right now. A sign of maturity, by the way, which children don't have and drug addicts don't have, is able to defer that pleasure. Okay, those are three we need to work on. I'm going to apply those to each level. So level number five, we said, was physical pleasure. What's... Oh, one last thing I must tell you. And it goes like this. When I talk about a different level of pleasure, I'm not saying there is another step up. I'm not saying that's five, this is four. What I'm saying is number four compared to number five is galaxies apart. Stratosphere. There is no comparison. Do not even think for one second that I just go from five to four. It's not a different level. It's a complete different world. So level five, I'll prove it to you. Level five is physical. What's level four? Pleasure. What's above physical? What kind of emotion? Love. The commentators say the greatest pleasure after physical pleasure is love. One moment of love is going to buy you all of level five physical pleasure. Give an example. Let's say you get married and have a baby, a beautiful baby girl. Ah, guggle, guggle, dee. And I come to your door one day and I'm like, who's there? It's Rabbi Lawrence, here to wish you a mazel tov. And you open the door, you welcome me in, you bring out your baby. Obviously, it's like 2 days old. I'm like, oh, it's so cute. All babies 2 days old look like E.T. No problem. No problem. It's cute. It's cute. Shape of the head, don't worry, it changes. I'm sure it does. They all look the same. But okay, very cute. Looks just like its mother, which is bad news, by the way. Especially at 2 days old. Okay. But with that, I'm like, what a cute little baby. Aww. Can I buy her? Like, well, can I buy your baby? I'm like, what do you mean? I'd like to pay some money for your baby. I'll take good care of her. She'll have a wonderful upbringing, the best schools, a wonderful nurturing family, me. But you never see her again. $1 million. Rabbi. I'm like, I'm so sorry. $5 million. What are you talking about? $10 million. $50 million. Heaven forbid. $1 billion. Now the guys are thinking, we'll have more. But no. At least the ladies will never ever say yes to this. That's an amazing thing. Because what you're saying is that I'm willing to give up $1 billion, which could, in reality, buy me a lot of five-level physical pleasure. I mean, I could do some major sick damage to level five with $1 billion. But I wouldn't do it for a moment of love with a creature who I just met 2 days ago. Are we seeing? It's too completely different. You can't compare it. It ain't level five, level four. That level of love is incredible. What is the counterfeit version of love? You should all know this by now. Lust. Yeah, lust. Yeah. What else would you say? Are you offering me something, Alex, which I wasn't aware of? Prostitution? I'm like... So what is that? So that's under lust. Well, that doesn't have to be a count. That could be a positive thing. How about infatuation? Obsession? Not in the physical. In the physical realm, it takes on that form. But in the emotional realm, it becomes infatuation. And you're right. You don't have to meet the person. You can infatuate about a person you've never met before. Right? You got a poster of George Clooney on the wall. Which I do. But you can see kids. Right? They go to these guys, they cry, screaming. And, you never know who he is. He's married with kids. You become infatuated. Obsession. Right? That's an unhealthy version. Listen to this incredible idea. Listen to this difference I heard. What's the difference between good love and bad love? So, listen to it. You've got to hear this. It's incredible. Good love is about commitment. Commitment. I commit myself to that thing, that person, that job. Bad love is attachment. Hear the difference? Hear me well. I am committed to my children, but I'm not attached to them. I am committed to my wife and our relationship, but I'm not attached to them. Many men who are afraid of committing have confused commitment with attachment. They think that once I am married, I become attached to this woman. Well, you shouldn't be. That's an unhealthy love relationship. But you need to be committed. Commitment's a great thing. But I still have me, and she still has her. Now we're committed to each other. Same with work. You can't be attached to your work. People are there till 4 in the morning, 3 in the morning, 2 in the morning. My sister-in-law is a lawyer. She told me she had to do a 36-hour day. She had to sleep under a desk in intervals. I'm like, are you even effective after 5 hours? I mean, 36. I'm like, done by 1 o'clock. I'm like, okay, I'm ready to go home. Give me a bagel. You know what I'm saying? So there is attachment. In her case, that was unfortunate. It wasn't her choice. But there is attachment, which people have. And there is commitment. Commitment is healthy. When you're standing under the chuppah, you're not attached to that person. You are committing yourself to that person. Another thing I'll mention as a side point, because I deal with this a lot, obviously, with the population I work with. People think they cannot get married to the person they're dating until they've found perfection. But no one is perfect. You need to be committed. The analogy I'll use is like this. Listen carefully. Think of basketball. Okay? Anyone here play basketball? From the foul line, a percentage chance you get the ball in. 70%. Very good. With how much effort do you throw the ball? No. Of course you don't. You put in 100% effort. Why? Why would that be? Why would you put 100% effort into knowing full well that your chance of getting the ball in is 70%? Because those are two different realities. Although the chance of me getting in is 70%, I'm still going to put 100% into that thing. Because I'm committed to getting this ball into that hoop. Same thing with marriage. You don't need to be 100% sure this is the right person for you. It could be 60%. And after you get married, it could go down to 40 sometimes. And you get into a fight, it becomes 10. And then you have a wonderful night together, it's 80, 90. But that's not the point. The point is, am I 100% committed to that 60%, to that 70%? You hear it? You don't marry perfection, you commit to perfection. You don't attach yourself to your person you are dating or the person you are married to, you become committed to that person. That is healthy as opposed to unhealthy love. That is true love as opposed to counterfeit love. Obsession. Right? Are we together? But that could be a great pleasure. If done the right way, it's incredible. Okay? Okay. So we did number five. Number five is? Number four is? Wow. Could it be a greater pleasure than love? Physical or emotional? What would be a higher pleasure than love? And I'm going to have to prove it to you. Now, once again, we're not like, okay, here's physical, here's love, right? Here's the next one. It's completely different. We are stratospheres apart. You cannot compare them. So number three is meaning. Meaning. It's also a pleasure. It's more sublime than physical, but it's still a pleasure. And it's going to be a hard one. Let's say we have a family, a man and woman, who survived the Holocaust. They went through hell. Went to three camps. Worked 5-6 years. They had a child with them. And their child was with them the entire time. And they hid their child. And took care of the child. And fed half of their rations to the child. And eventually, they managed to survive and leave. And they make their way to Israel. Now Israel, after the war, 46, 47, was a very, very difficult place to live. It wasn't like it is today, with birthright trips and buses schlepping around. You know, where are you going to eat? Where are you going to live? The British were there, there were Arabs attacking. Not an easy time. But they find a home. And they find basic rudimentary work. And they have a very simple life. About a year after they arrive in Palestine, They're going to knock on the door. And there is a 16-year-old boy standing at the door with a gun on his back. And he's like, are you the Cohens? And you're like, yeah. You have a son? We do. How old is he? He's 15. We need him. Need my son? What for? Well, we are fighting the British and the Arabs, and we want to create a state of Israel, but we need an army. I'm going to take your child and make him part of this army. You're like, take my one and only child who just survived the Holocaust? What are you going to do with him? Teach him how to shoot a gun. Am I going to see him again? Maybe. And then maybe not. And people did it. People gave up their love, obsession for a moment of meaning. For a moment of meaning. And it's a high level. Now, here we get tricky. Because what is the opposite of pain? People usually think pleasure. That's not true. The opposite of pain is no pain. You can be in pain, yet still be in pleasure. You can be climbing a mountain. You can be training as an athlete. You can be working very hard to get a qualification in extreme pain, trying to think through an idea, a concept. Yet that can become one of the greatest pleasures of life. It's challenging, but it can still be a pleasure. Bringing up children is the classic example. Bringing up kids is extremely pleasurable. And at the same time, it is hell on earth. They drive you crazy. And they know how to do it. They're trained like little militia men and women to drive you out of your mind. But yet through all of that, the greatest pleasure that comes through life is having kids. But it's painful. So too with meaning. Finding true meaning in life can enhance your pleasure considerably. More than physical, and we just proved more than love. But there must be a counterfeit. What is the counterfeit pleasure of meaning? False meaning. Is there such a thing as false meaning? Is there such a thing as false meaning? Of course! If there's false love, oh, that we're down with. False love, Rabbi, I'm an expert, yeah? But there's also false meaning. People get involved in stuff, in communist parties, in Nazi parties, and they really feel a tremendous feeling of meaning in their life. But it's false. It's not healthy. It's abusive. It's still meaning. But you've got to watch out for it. Now, distinguishing the difference at that level can be very, very difficult. Great people have fallen for the most absurd levels of meaning. I mean, I don't want to bash other religions, but I drive past the Church of Scientology every day. I'm like, I don't get it. I just don't get it. What do they see in it? They must be getting a level of meaning. But they know that the ultimate end of Scientology is that aliens are going to come into this world and rescue us. Tom, I just don't get it. You can chop all you want. You can shout all you want. I just don't get it. But he must be getting some meaning from it. Enough to jump on a sofa. He must be. Yet, we know he's a little kooky. We know it. He's good looking. He's a good actor. But he's a little kooky. If he thinks aliens are going to come to this world and take us into another planet. If you pay the right amount. So there is meaning. But there must be a counterfeit. Another good level of meaning is being in an army. You've seen those guys? They give up everything to put on the same clothing, to give up their name for a number, to become a soldier in the Marines, to be shouted at. And you watch these guys being hazed, you watch these guys' movie and documentary, these guys, it is wild stuff. These people are going through absolute hell. They're like, I don't get it. They like take them to the beach and they like run them around. Actually, it's interesting. They treat them like hell, but they can never hit them. You know that? You can do what you want with them, but you can't beat them. Yeah? What do they get out of it? Physical pleasure? No, no. This is true pain. Love? Possibly. But there is meaning. For that Marine, for that soldier who's standing there, wanting to throw his hat up in the air, he has reached a level of meaning. And that is a tremendous pleasure. And you've got to admit, it's going to be greater than the pleasure he had from the pizza. And it's going to be greater than the pleasure he had from that girl he met last night. It's a high level. It's sublime to some degree. But there's a higher level. It's got to be. How do I know? Because I said there are five levels. What's a higher level of meaning? Now we're getting into very fine categories. So you've got to listen carefully. Now, once again, you may not see the vast difference between these levels, but they are expansive. Tremendous differences. As much as physical went to love and love went to meaning, meaning is also going to have to jump a long way to get to this place, whether you see it or not. Because maybe you never experienced this level of pleasure before. It could be. What's the second level of pleasure? Yeah? Being a good person, is that pleasurable? I hate it, personally. I like to be mean. That's much easier. That's what the commentators say. Second level pleasure is creativity. That's what they say. Creativity. When you're able to be creative, you reach a much higher level. Yet, let's use the example again. Okay? There's the foot soldier. He's going to battle with his platoon. He feels this tremendous connection to the guys or the girls that they have worked with and trained with in order to fight this battle. They're ready to go. They're psyched. They're going to save America. They're going to save Israel, whatever it is. It's a true meaning for a good cause. To beat the bad guys and be a good guy. You've got meaning. Who has a higher level of pleasure? The higher level of pleasure is the person who has created this reality. The person who is behind the scenes orchestrating the whole thing. The general. Now, maybe he's not down there with the troops. He may be in another office. He may be in another country. But he knows, or she knows, that they're the ones that put this whole thing together. They orchestrated it. That level of creativity, of making this whole thing come together, seeing it, and you're the one who's making the battle plan, that's a much higher level of pleasure. A builder. A builder builds a building. It takes the bricks, looks at the blueprint, and makes it happen. There goes the door, there goes the window, stands back at the end and says, that looks great. It's a level of pleasure. What's the higher level of pleasure? The architect. You see, the architect created that reality. The architect was the one who saw it and made it go from paper and saw it become brick and mortar and glass. That level is very sublime. Now, it could be we've never experienced that before. One of the greatest pleasures you as a human are ever going to have, and by the way, it is the most natural high you've ever had. And not only that, it comes once, and then when it comes a second time, it's not only as good, it can be even better. You see, unlike eating pizza, where the first bite is good, then the second bite's not as good, and by the fifth or sixth, you're like, I've had enough. And by the ninth, you're like, we're done. When you get to this level of pleasure, you can repeat the process, and it becomes just as powerful. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? Creating life. Being at a birth. Now, giving birth will leave aside for 1 second. But witnessing and being part of that process. Maybe even giving birth. I've never actually personally given birth before. But what a tremendous, amazing power. You've created life. You've created life. And it's a weird feeling. Please God, you'll all go through it at the right time. Get married first. You'll all go through it. You're like there. You just get married. And then 2 months later, no. Then 10 months later. 10 months later, this creature comes out and you're like, oh my God, we made this. Together with God, we made this amazing life. And you freak out. You go through this freak out phase. You're like, oh my God, I am now responsible. My wife had this. On our first date out, after the birth of our first daughter, we had a big date to Pathmark to buy diapers. It's a big, after a baby, that's a big night out. Big night out. You're like walking those aisles. Yeah, I got a social life. I'm free. Bring it on. And you experience this creation of life. It's a natural high. It's too much. You don't know what to do with it. Because you created it. And believe me, being part of that is completely different to just witnessing it. The doctor's there. He's like, okay, very good. Sign here, please. Like the nurse is there. And she's like prodding the heel and taking footprints and sticking stuff in their eyes. You're like, look! Look at the baby! We made this! She's like, yeah, congratulations, Rabbi Hajiav. But you as the creator, you've gone elsewhere with us. A whole different realm. What's the counterfeit of creativity? What's the counterfeit pleasure? Yeah. Creating destruction. It's a great feeling. Now, I've never been a dictator before. And I never got what's in it for them. But, you know, you watch these guys. You watch these Saddam Husseins. You watch these Stalins, these Hitlers. You watch these Pol Pots. They're definitely getting a kick out of doing this whole torturing thing. Right? They're not putting people through these torture chambers without feeling a little bit of pleasure. Now, for us, it's sick. It should be. It's counterfeit. But it's still a pleasure. They're creating chaos, destruction, havoc. Here's something which I still, honestly, still haven't got my head around. There's somebody who is creating spam email. I'm like, 1 second. I don't get it. I promise, I don't get it. I'm like, 1 second. If I see one more Viagra advert on my internet, I'm going to go crazy. Is there one guy who's sitting there, ha, 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 50,000 people offered money from some Angolan guy. I'm like, what's it? It's a sick pleasure. But he's created a web of havoc and chaos. And he knows, like, I don't know what it is. I have no idea what. It's like a thrill of the chase. Anyone know what it is? But the guy who's doing it, or the girl who's doing it, they must be getting some tremendous thrill. It's great creativity. Now, these people are geniuses. Many of them end up becoming, if they, like, go onto the good side, they leave the dark side, and they become like experts computers. There was a guy, I got a call, this is many years ago, it's a true story. I haven't told the story here at the JC before. About 5 years ago, I got a call, I was at home, living in my old apartment, and I got a call from a woman who got my name through this whole drug addiction thing I was involved in, and she said, I got a problem with my son. I said, what's wrong? She said, my son is a gambling addict. It's a true story. I said, really? I said, what's the story? He goes, the guy, my son, had gone around to people in his community, told them that he needed them to invest in a business he was starting, took all the money, 70, 80 grand, I don't remember exact, some crazy amount of money, and pitched it all away at a casino. Spent it all. Kid was 17 years old. 17 years old, had managed to get rid of 80, 90 grand in gambling. You know the first thing that occurred to me? First of all, wow, that's a lot of money for a kid that age. But what also occurred to me was, can you imagine if this kid was in business? Can you imagine? What a tremendous power. He's able to get $90,000 or whatever it was worth of investment in a business which didn't even exist. If this kid could channel that power, channel that creativity, and take it to the good side, he could become great. Now, in the meantime, he's got to go to Gambling Anonymous, right, and get on the right path. But that was what I was thinking. I was thinking, wow, what a 17-year-old kid, 90 grand venture capital. I'll take that. I'll take that. That's creativity. There's a good, there's a counterfeit. But what a pleasure, what a thrill.
In order to obtain the level of pleasure that comes with creativity, does it always have to transport into the physical, like creating light, creating the structure of a building? Or can you use something with your imagination or creating concepts?
No, I don't think so. I think 100%. It doesn't have to be physical. I use those examples because they're the most obvious. But ideas? People sit in think tanks. I mean, they have no lives. But it's an amazing thing. I have a friend of mine, he's in a think tank. He gets paid to think. I always wonder, when he's resting on Shabbat and can't work anymore, does he have to like think of nothing? It's like, how does he rest on Shabbat? Spends all week thinking that no more work. Like, okay, let's get drunk. How else do you experience that? Yes. The answer is yes. You're now entering the sublime. It could be that pleasure comes from creating an idea, a concept, a thought. I guess Karl Marx, I mean, I think he was wrong most of the time, and Freud, but they must have had tremendous enjoyment from creating tremendous ideas. That's a level of pleasure which maybe many of us don't always have, but absolutely. Absolutely. So what's number one pleasure? What's first class pleasure? The commentators say exactly that. And this is something we have to really... Now, once again, we're completely separate and apart. But the highest pleasure is reaching out and connecting to God, to the ultimate creator of all reality, to that which is behind every other pleasure. That's what he says. That's Sefer Chinuch. He says someone who can go out of themselves and connect to the ultimate pleasure giver, the ultimate creator, and reach a spiritual connection, find a meaning in that world, that level of pleasure takes them into the stratosphere. That's what he says. Not only that, if you look at the greatest Jewish prayer, the Shema, it follows this exact pattern. In just the first two lines, this entire lecture I've given, and a lot more, believe me, are summed up. We're told to love God with all our heart, soul, and might. And the commentators say when it says heart and soul, it means find meaning, find creativity. And when it says might, it means with your money. Physically get something out of it. Reach that level by using... In other words, these are steps up to the highest level of spiritual connection. We start low and we work our way up. And the Shema testifies to that reality. That, when you have... Now, once again, when we reach this level, actually any level, it doesn't have to be forever. It could be a moment. Once again, the chocolate in your mouth, it's there, it's gone. The love, you love the kid next thing you want to strangle the kid. Heaven forbid, right? The meaning could be fleeting. It could still be real. The creativity could be a moment of, I get it. The resolution of a doubt could come in a second. So too that moment. You stand at the Kotel. It's a broken wall with weeds coming out of it. And you feel this tremendous rush. And you take a picture, and you come home, like, look where I was. And they're like, it's a broken wall, honey. But no, I was at a Kotel. It was incredible. It was meaning, how great. I connected to get. They're not going to get it. You're like, okay, so it was a broken wall, and what was behind it? I don't know, I couldn't see. It was like blocked with trees. I saw a dome, but I don't know what was there. It's a great feeling. But that's the ultimate connection. Let's take a moment. Let's recap. We said there are five pleasures. We said in Judaism, each one of these needs to be engaged. You need to become a connoisseur. You've got to focus on the goal of the pleasure. You've got to make it happen. You've got to watch out for counterfeit pleasures because there's always a trap. Without that, you can't be rewarded for your efforts. We said number five is physical pleasure. It's a great thing. Judaism, 6 days of fasting in a year. 80 days of feasting. I'm down with that. We said love. Love is very important. We love each other. We love God. We have relationships. We talk about finding meaning in your life. You can't just go through life without a purpose, a meaning. Most people don't. Why are you alive? The next six pack? Creativity. Create meaning for others. Create life for others. And finally, connect to the ultimate supreme being, and it all comes together and starts again. Thank you very much. We'll stop over there.